It's game week. Granted, it's just a preseason game and just the first preseason game, but it is game week for the Tennessee Titans as they prepare to face the Chicago Bears on Saturday afternoon, a rare afternoon preseason game, no less. And nothing gets you more excited for the regular season than knowing that you get to watch a little preseason football, I think. I don't know about all of you out there. If football's on TV, I tend to watch it. So I think most of you are probably the same way. So we will look at that matchup and all that's happened with the Titans since last we chatted on this episode of Believe in Titans podcast with the usual lineup. Former Titans cornerback Denard Walker. Denard, good day.
Good day. How you doing, David? I'm doing excellent. How you doing today?
I am doing great. And John Glennon of the Nashville Post. John, how are you, sir?
Doing well. Hope you guys are too.
Doing great. Doing great. Well, as we said, it's Titans versus Bears on Saturday. And one thing that the first preseason game does that I think attracts a lot of attention, probably unnecessary attention in some ways, but it brings the release of the first depth chart, and team officials will tell you it's an unofficial depth chart, but it is a depth chart nonetheless, and people will comb through it. I think, you know, a lot of it is sort of perfunctory. Certainly Ryan Tannehill's listed as the starting quarterback. Derrick Henry is listed as the starting running back. And even if guys like that were in trouble, we're getting some real pressure from behind, maybe we're losing their jobs, it would not be reflected in this first depth chart. But if you dig deep enough, there are some nuggets to be unearthed there. So John, let's start with you. Let's get archaeological on the first depth chart. Dig in there and what jumped out at you when you looked at this thing?
Find a whole lot that was stunning, certainly, and that's to be expected. A couple things I noted of interest. The first one probably to me. Inside linebacker next to Alshire is not Monty Rice, third round draft pick in 2021, but Jack Gibbons, the undrafted free agent from last year. And maybe that's not a shocker given that Jack Gibbons was getting a solid amount of playing time last year. And even when both of those guys were healthy right near the end of the year, when Gibbons and Rice were both healthy, I think Gibbons got more snaps than he did in that big Jacksonville game in the season finale. So not completely out of left field, but still, you know, Monty Rice is again, a third round draft pick, a guy that their expectations surrounding and to see Jack Gibbons is clearly listed as the guy ahead of him, you know, was a bit of an eye opener. Another one that caught my eye right off was at safety. You know, we've talked a lot about, you know, not the deepest position for the Titans. You know, two really good starting safeties, and then it's kind of a crapshoot behind those two starting safeties. And we saw listed here on the depth chart, first guy up behind Kevin Byard, Elijah Molden, you know, who has played corner in his first 2 years, slot corner that. So, you know, there'd been, he'd played some corner, some safety during the off season and in training camp, there'd been talk that he would play some safety, but to see him listed, you know, strictly right here as the backup to Kevin Byard, you know, that was a little bit of a surprise, a little bit of a change to me. And behind him, you know, behind, Elijah Molden is another guy in a similar fashion. Shy Carter, who is basically a guy who's played cornerback, you know, through most of his NFL career. And he, again, is listed as a safety there as well. And it's, you know, it's one of two things. You know, maybe it's an indication that these guys are coming along well, you know, and are both versatile players. And again, as I say, probably also an indication that that's not the deepest position in the world for the Titans right now. And they're kind of having to make do with not a lot of experience there. So those are two that came to mind immediately for me.
It's interesting with Molden too, because there are 11 cornerbacks listed between the two cornerback positions on that depth chart, and Molden's nowhere to be seen there. Now, when you get down to the 53-man roster at the start of the season, you know, maybe he factors in there, but it's clear, I think, from this depth chart that coaches look at him right now as a safety, and he will go into this season as a safety who can play cornerback, not maybe so much a guy who can, who is one or the other, depending on the situation. I think it probably the idea, I think the ideal would be he's the second coming, or maybe even a better version of what Dane Cruikshank was a couple of years ago, where he was a safety who kind of did cornerback type things in coverage and whatnot. And that would seem to be the best case scenario for him at this point. But I thought that was interesting as well. Denard, did you get a good look at the depth chart? Anything catch your eye as you went through it?
Well, I was a little shocked. I thought it was a typo, John, but the Sean Murphy bunt and head of Roger McCreary, I didn't see that coming. I know that you and David have been out there in practices, but you know how high I am on Roger McCreary, even though David continues to talk about the length of his arms.
That's John. Don't throw that on me.
I'm just kidding. But what I can't figure is how in the world can one of your most consistent players on defense last year, who was one of three players to start all 17 games in 2022, became the first Titan rookie to start every game, and he finished third on the team in tackling. You talk about his 8 passes defended, and not to mention that play against the Chargers. You got to be very intellectual to be able to do an alley hoop to Kyle Lugg in the end zone that game against L.A. But what I'm just a little shocked is how in the world can one of your most consistent players, not just your cornerback, ends up second behind. And don't get me wrong, Sean Murphy Bunn, he's a talented cornerback. But I didn't see that coming.
Go ahead, John.
I know what you're saying. Absolutely, Denard. I think what might be playing into that partially too is that maybe they're saying now, you know, Roger McCreary kind of played both last year, slot and outside. And maybe what they're saying now is that, you know, with Sean Murphy Bunting coming along, and so often teams now are three cornerbacks. It's almost like the base defense is three corners now. And so maybe Sean Murphy Bunting is your guy on the outside, and Roger McCreary is now almost solely, you know, a slot guy. So it's almost like, you know, he could almost, even if Murphy Bunting and Fulton are technically your starters on the outside, you know, my sense is that McCreary is almost a starter, you know, as the slot guy too. And he may go outside as well.
Right. And there is no slot cornerback listed on this depth chart. And I agree. I assume if there was, McCreary would be listed number one there. And even if all he does is play slot cornerback, he's probably going to get 60% of the defensive snaps or more most games. And I mean, he's going to be seeing plenty of playing time, but it is, I agree with Denard also that it's notable. You know, a guy who did so much last year, it's almost like he earned the right, based on what he did last year, to be listed as number one right now. And it probably speaks to how well and really quietly Sean Murphy Bunting has gone about his business since he's been here. You know, there was some talk early about his leadership and whatnot, but it's not like Caleb Farley last year, where you're breaking down every pass that came his way in training camp. And, oh, you know, he gave up three big ones today, but yesterday he was, but you know, it sounds like, you know, Sean Murphy Bunting is just kind of a guy who's not getting noticed very much, which is a good thing for a cornerback. Two things that struck me, and similarly to Roger McCreary, and this really isn't a surprise, but it's a surprise to me in terms of the way the off season started. Rashad Weaver, you know, the way he played last year, you thought, I'm sure he went into the off season thinking, I'm a starter. But then, of course, Harold Landry is healthy again and doing his thing. The Titans signed Arden Key, and all of a sudden, you know, Rashad Weaver is right back where he was. And, you know, that's part of doing business in the NFL, but it's probably a little bit of frustration for him at this point, because after 2 years and, you know, you've some pretty good play at times, you probably feel like it's your turn, it's your time. And, you know, now he's going to have to pick his spots again. But the other thing that, that I find fascinating, and it's, although not, again, not terribly surprising, one of the guys who's not practicing, so on this depth chart, he's listed in parentheses, but it's our man Dylan Radins, who we have discussed quite a bit on here, is listed at the bottom of the line at left guard and mentioned nowhere among the tackles. And similar to Elijah Molden, I guess, it seems like the thinking going into this season, or you know, through the offseason, into as he works to get healthy and work his way back, is that he will do so as a guard and not as a tackle after a couple years of unsuccessful attempts to settle in at that position. So, you know, we're not going to be seeing Dylan Radins against the Bears or at any point during this preseason, but when he does get back to health and does get in onto the active roster at some point, I think it seems obvious his path to the field is at guard, and it might mean he doesn't play. Now, you know, of course he practiced at guard a fair amount the last couple of years. They wanted him to be well-versed at numerous positions, but this might effectively be a redshirt year for him, where he just has to work at learning guard and then, and see what he can do next year there.
Along those lines.
Yeah.
You know, I was just going to say, yeah, they certainly gave us an indication, you know, of that a little bit last year. You know, for weeks on end, none of us could really figure, you know, as much as Dennis Daly was struggling that left tackle, you know, in place of Taylor Lewan, you know, the question was asked repeatedly, you know, would you consider Dylan Radins, who played left tackle in college and played it very well, you know, would you even consider, you know, moving him, giving him a shot at left tackle? And they never did last year. You know, they kept him at guard. So for whatever reason, you know, despite the fact in that one game that he played against San Fran, and, you know, he held his own in that game against left tackle, they have just, that appears to be cut and dried, that he is no longer a man to be considered a tackle.
The Titans, of course, also Mike Vrabel made headlines this week in preparing for the Bears by saying he's gonna step back, let the newly promoted defensive line coach / assistant head coach Terrell Williams run things. I think the vast majority of people had reacted well to this. Denard, is this a significant move, do you think? I mean, how much coaching actually goes on during the first preseason game? How much of an eye-opening experience do you suspect this will be for Terrell Williams on Saturday?
I think it's exciting. I mean, if you look at his units the last 2 years, you're talking about the most improved unit in the National Football League has been the Titans defensive line. He's got these guys going. I mean, you look at last year. I thought the game was in Jacksonville, January the 7th last year, and everything was on the line. What was amazing is that Tennessee only gave up 19 yards of rushing, and they got gashed the last time they played in Nashville. I looked at the game against Philadelphia. The only bright spot other than Traylon Burks was the defensive line. They gave up a total of 67 yards to a really tough unit in Philly. And this unit has been improving. You're talking about Jeffrey Simmons, arguably being the best player. Tierre Tart is coming into his own. And Denico Autry, if he's not hurt this year, John, this can be one of the best units in the league in 2023. And a lot of that goes to Terrell. Terrell Williams have done just an exceptional job with that defensive line. One thing you know about that Titans team, David, is that when you play them, they're stingy against the run. They've been in the top five, the last 2 years in run defense. And when you have a defense or unit that's producing like that, that means they give you a great chance of winning. And I think this is great. I mean, Mike Vrabel is, this is a great move because it allows Terrell people to see what he's really about and see his coaching skill. And this can be a great opportunity for him, kind of the interview for coaching position next year. Because a lot of people look at him.
I don't think it's significant in terms of, you know, people aren't going to watch this game and look at the decisions Terrell Williams makes in terms of clock management, or, you know, there's not going to be bold play calls that people are going to go, oh yeah, okay, that's the guy I need to coach my team. But I think when you look at Mike Vrabel, 5 years as a head coach, 3 playoff appearances, 2 division titles, 1 number one seed in the AFC, get to the conference championship game one time. He's on the competition committee for the league. He's a guy I think who has created quite a bit of respect for himself around the league. And when it comes hiring time in January and next February, I think there's bound to be somebody saying, huh, if Mike Vrabel really likes this guy and thinks highly enough of him, maybe I should talk to him. And then, of course, it's on Terrell Williams to convince somebody to give him that job. And John, I'll ask you this. You know, Terrell is not a huge personality, I don't think. He's not super charismatic the way a Mike Vrabel is. He's kind of soft spoken in a lot of ways. When you look at him, when you talk to him, do you see head coaching sort of characteristics in him in any way that jump out at you?
I certainly wouldn't rule it out, you know, and Mike Vrabel's referenced this a time or two, you know, not only with Terrell Williams, but with other guys too, you know, and he says, you know, sort of coaching, a lot of coaching is your ability to get along with players, to make them, you know, to form relationships with them so that they will follow you, so they will respect you. And I think Terrell Williams is a tremendous job with that. People like him, the players that play for him genuinely like him, genuinely respect him. And for good reason. You know, I think we could all make the argument that he is probably, you know, the best assistant that Mike Vrabel has had over all these years, you know, year in and year out since they started. You know, and I look at what he has done, you know, you can say, yeah, look what he's done with Jeffrey Simmons, which is great. You know, we've seen Simmons get better and better. But, you know, Jeffrey Simmons was also a first-round draft pick, so that's to be expected. But a lot of the other guys too, whether it's a guy like Danico Autry, who comes in after several years elsewhere in the league, and he has the 2 best years of his career here in terms of sacks. You know, I think that's another testament to Terrell Williams. And then you look at like, you know, UDFA guys, Tier Tart, Naquan Jones coming in, making impacts, making the roster when they weren't necessarily expected to. You look at journeyman kind of guys like DeMarcus Walker and Mario Edwards, who came in last year and really had kind of career years or close to and set themselves up for good contracts. So every different type of talent level that comes in for Terrell Williams seems to get better and better on his watch. So I think it's great. Like you said, you know, it's not necessarily immediately people are going to say, okay, we want to hire, you know, we want to interview him, we want to hire, but it's the first step in getting that kind of exposure. You know, these kind of stories come out and people say, oh, who is this Terrell Williams? I want to read up a little bit more about him. I want to find out more about him. What's his track record? And so on. And that's the kind of thing I think that eventually leads to, you know, more interviews and more publicity, you know, and maybe the next step is a coordinator. Maybe it's a defensive coordinator. But regardless, Mike Vrabel really likes him. He made him, not only the D-line coach, but he's an assistant coach now for defense, assistant head coach defense. So clearly taken, some steps in the right direction, Troy Williams, and well-deserved that he gets this sort of opportunity here.
And as we look ahead to this game, Denard, you know, give us a quick primer. How much of the playbook is going to be in play? Like I assume on defense, it's probably what, just a handful of coverages, a handful of fronts, they and they want to see these guys go and make plays in this first game, right? And it'll be a similar thing on offense. Not a ton of formations, not a ton, you know, sort of base plays and keep it simple and go and make plays. Is that usually the approach here?
Yes, because typically preseason is for the younger players and for the players that are trying to make the squad. It's not for the veterans. What you want in preseason, especially like look at Tennessee right now. You got three preseason games until they head off to the Big Easy in New Orleans. What you want to see the first game, let's say if you're the offense, you're the offensive coordinator, Tim Kelly, maybe you say D-Hop is not going to play. Treylon Burks, you're not going to see him. Ryan Tannehill is going to be working on his tan. King Henry is going to be lifting weights. What you probably want to see is your offensive line. You want to see you only got really one starter coming back, and that's Aaron Brewer, who's going to be your starting center. You want to see how they work together. Continuity builds chemistry. And what you need to see from this line before they go down to New Orleans, because you want to see them kind of get some snaps early, see how they can mesh together. And then you want to also look at the kicking game. Okay, Randy Bullock is gone. You know
yes,
how
he
I
is.
Feel about Big Randy. You know, I love him to death. And what I mean, I was looking at his stats. It was amazing that he hit 85% of his field goals. He, what, drilled 28 of his extra points. And now, was it 38? He was 38 of 38 for inside the 40. Okay, if I might be wrong, but I mean, I read these stats correctly. But look at this. You got two new kickers. John and David, you talked about this last week. Caleb Shudek and then Trey Wolf. Who's going to replace Randy Bullock? I mean, let's not forget about Fair Randy. He won a lot of games here in Tennessee.
He did. He had a nice 2-year run, and the Titans are going to try and go on the cheap here. On the subject of the offensive line, though, I want to come back to you real quickly. You know, typically first preseason game, the guys who do start couple series, maybe three, you know, depending on how things go and they're out. Would you almost expect with this offensive line, given the vast remake and the uncertainty? I mean, there's a chance this group could stay together, play the whole first half, don't you think?
That's what I'm anticipating, because it's a new offensive line. You got Tim Kelly. You got a new offensive coordinator. I know I give you kind of a little idea. Like when I went to Denver, usually that first preseason game, we got Ray Rose, who was our new defensive coordinator. And what he wanted to see from the defense, he was like, listen, you guys probably, let's say the second and third preseason game, the first game we played about a quarter. And then the second and third, we played about a half. And what he wanted to see is before we played the Giants, he wanted that defense to mesh together. So that's what I'm anticipating is this offensive line. They might go a half. I wouldn't, especially being the first preseason game, I see them getting a lot of work against the Bears.
Yeah, I almost think – I mean, we've talked about how big this is for the two young quarterbacks, and I would suspect we'll see both quarterbacks get some reps behind whatever the starting five is there. And, you know, maybe even alternate by quarter. One plays the first, one plays the second, the other go back to the first one for the third and so on. You know, and John, we've talked about the quarterback battle quite a bit. As you're preparing for this game, what players, two or three of them, I guess, what are you looking at? Who's this important for in your eyes?
Yeah, I, as you say, I think the number one storyline will almost certainly be that quarterback situation, you know, and they're battling, you know, if the Titans keep three, who's number two, who's number three, you know, can Malik Willis play well enough so that he will force the Titans to keep that third quarterback situation. The first thing I want to look for, Malik Willis, is he, you know, is he going to be better at getting rid of that ball? You know, we started seeing this as far back as the preseason last year. Remember, Mike Vrabel actually pulled Malik Willis early from a preseason game because he said he was tired of seeing Malik pull the ball down and run instead of making anticipatory throws. So are we seeing improvement there in Malik Willis? You know, Will Levis, what about the accuracy? Are we going to see accurate throws? Are we going to see him, you know, show the touch that he's been working on, or is everything going to be fastball, you know, which will be an issue. Offensive line, as you mentioned, I think I'm especially interested at right tackle. You know, again, I'm with you guys. I think we will certainly see that first team offensive line, and especially it's going to be important for Chris Hubbard Not only has he, only recently signed and now is the expected starter at right tackle. This is a guy who played a combined 80 snaps the last 2 years. So he needs work. You know, he needs as much work as he can overall, not to mention the fact that he is getting a crash course in a new offense, new teammates, new offensive line mates, et cetera, et cetera. So certainly those are big question marks. I think defensive backs, you know, we talked about earlier here today, the backups, both at corner and at safety, there's not a lot of experience. There aren't a lot of names there. So this is a real opportunity for some guys to make a statement and say, hey, I want to be that third or fourth safety. I want to be that fourth or fifth cornerback. You know, there's opportunity here to be gained. And then, you know, maybe two more, one on special teams, not only the kickers, but I want to see Kyle Phillips return a few punts because we saw a lot of potential in Kyle Phillips early last year, but we also saw him muff two punt returns, you know, in his very short span on the field last year. And that's the kind of thing, you know, I'm still in the back of his mind. He's got to get through that. He's got to find out whether that confidence is still there, that he is able to return punts. So I think that's going to be important for him. And I'm also looking forward. I want to see some Tajay Spears at running back. You know, he's listed behind Hassan Haskins at number two. But I think, you know, that there's more versatility for Tajay Spears. There's more upside to him. I'm eager to see what he can do both as a running back and coming out of the backfield, given that he'll be looked, you know, people will be looking for him to catch some passes this year.
Yeah, and for me, it's some of the guys who have kind of been around for a while, a year or more, have played either not at all in the regular season or a little bit. And I'm talking about guys like Racy McMath or Mason Kinsey or a Jaden Peavy. You know, Peavy's a guy who got some love from Mike Vrabel early in training camp. But as I look at these sorts of guys, you know, they every year they're the kind of guys that you're trying to bring in better players. And I think back to Denard, one of your former teammates back in the day, a guy named Spencer George, who was an undrafted running back out of Rice, hung around for 3 years behind Eddie George and Rodney Thomas, and ultimately played 18 games. In that time, he returned one punt and four kickoffs, but was always around until he wasn't. And I remember Floyd Reese saying at that point, you know, with guys like that, you want them to come in every year and show you something more. Show me something that I didn't see from you last year. And when they stop doing that, it's sort of, you know, his theory was then it's time to move on from these guys. And a guy like Mason Kinsey, you know, he's been a great story here, a Division III player, you know, actually has gotten on the field a couple times. He's, you know, he's a hard worker. It's the ultimate underdog story, but, you know, it almost feels like he has maxed out at this point. And if he doesn't show a little more flash, a little more strength, whatever it is that the coaches particularly want to see from him, you know, this could sort of be the end of the line for him. You know, Racy McMath's a guy with unquestionable physical ability that, you know, early this time a year ago, he was creating buzz in training camp and had good preseason. And then ultimately, you know, it didn't transfer for him. So he's got to find a way to be a playmaker more consistently. And, you know, those are the kind of guys that I'm going to be looking at. You know, I don't have a general manager's eye, of course, but it'll be, you know, show me something different. Make me think that they're going to have to find a spot for you. And Denard, I want to ask you this real quickly as we wind down here. John referenced the right tackle situation, which got a little clearer in terms of the candidates to replace Nicholas Petit-Frere in over the first six games when Jamarco Jones was waived late last week after two incidents in practices. One, he gets in a fight with Jeffrey Simmons, and then the next day irritates the entire defense by throwing what was considered a dirty block going down to the knees. You know, this is not not an undrafted rookie, right? This is a guy who maybe he wasn't going to be the starting right tackle in week one, but I think without question, this was somebody that coaches and management thought was going to be part of the 53-man roster when the season started. You know, what message did Mike Vrabel send with that move? How important is it for, you know, to send a message like that when a guy has two incidents in a row like that?
The message is no one player is above the team. You know, everyone, you got to be accountable for your actions. You're a grown man. And the thing about Jamarco, what's disappointing, and they just signed him last year where they gave him a 2-year deal and a nice chunk of change. And that's what's so disappointing. We've been talking about Jamarco possibly being the starting right tackle. This is why when you sent this information, I thought Chris Hubbard, and I'm thinking, oh, what about Jamarco Jones? And now I'm like, okay, I see why you're gone now. And you can't do that. Not to mention, a fight is okay. A fight is okay. But when you intentionally go after a guy or you try to hurt your own teammate in training camp, and David, when you haven't even really started a game for Tennessee and you haven't made an impact, guess what? You're out of the door. That's the way it works. Now, if that was Jeffrey Simmons, I'm pretty sure the big man wouldn't do that. But the fact that you end up getting into a fight with the big man in the first place is, I'm not saying that's the reason you out, but when you do something intentionally that goes against everything that Mike Vrabel believes, you're gone.
Yeah, well, it's always sort of the joke that you hear, right? Don't hurt the good players. Like, if you're Jamarco Jones, you want to fight somebody, don't fight Jeffrey Simmons. Number one, you're probably going to come out on the wrong end of that. But number two, God forbid you do something to hurt him in that situation. I mean, that's bad enough. And then, it just kind of went south for him from there. But
conduct detrimental to the team. You're gone.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's, you know, and we said it earlier in this offseason. That's a guy Mike Vrabel has known for a long time. The sense was Mike Vrabel wanted him to make this team and do good things for the Titans, but that's not the way it worked. And we will see how Chris Hubbard and everybody else does this again this Saturday against Chicago, and we will be back next week to break down everything we saw in that game. Until then, John Glennon, thanks as always.
Hey, thanks, guys.
Denard Walker, thank you.
Thank you, David.
And thanks everybody out there again for listening to Believe in Titans.